It is again time for the New American Dream Radio Show. The American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra.
What we must have is a new American dream. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream. Not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. The new America, the real hope of the world.
Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eye. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and we're having a little bit of technical difficulties tonight, so bear with us. If anything sounds funny, then we'll just have to keep trying. So, anyhow, here we go. As usual, I'm going to start off with a song. He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's only 31 and he's only 17. Been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain. A Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will. To you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France. He's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan. And he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy. He's fighting for the rights. He says it's for the peace of all. He's the one you must decide who's to live and who's to die. And he's never seen the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned them as they come? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war. Welcome, everyone. This is, I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. And, as I said, we have been having some problems, getting my co-host, Mike Palachuk on the line, and I'm going to try again right now. Even as we speak, but you have to bear with me because I can only type and talk so fast that I'm a guy, you know, I get multitasked as well, so the other stuff. So let me see here, let's try this. Okay. With a little bit of luck, hearing him, so I don't know quite what to do here. I think I'm just going to go ahead and read this. That's correct. Please welcome these special guests. Frank Cordera, Bill Ferruccio, Richard Flamer, Thomas Wortman, Jim Fetcher, and Rachel Finley. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Cleveland and Madison in San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas, Mexico. In Fort Lauderdale, in Duluth, in Des Moines, in Fort Orange, and wherever you are.
And now, from Port Orange, Florida, we're stopped at World News Trust and Nation of Change and many other sites. Here's Phil Ferruccio with It's the Umpire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. You know, with all this craziness in the world, you know, what's interesting is there's no money for anything. You probably noticed the police are pulling people over so they can get more revenue, and everybody has nothing in the cities, the towns, the money, the budgeting. Love that dirty water and the dirty ward. You know, today, Main Section, about a year ago, had an extensive investigative piece on lead in the drinking water supply of many rural communities. They found that about 100,000 people get their drinking water from utilities that discovered high lead but failed to treat the water or remove the lead. Dozens of utilities took more than 1 year to formulate a treatment plan and even longer to begin treatment. And about 4 million Americans get water from small operators who skipped all the required tests or did not even conduct the tests properly, violating a cornerstone of federal safe drinking water laws. In more than 2,000 communities, lead tests were either skipped twice or, in other instances, tests were not properly conducted for 5 or more years. And about 850 small water utilities with a documented history of lead contamination failed to properly test the water for 5 or more years. And state and federal water safety officials told the USA Today, who did a piece on this, that regulators are lenient with small water systems because they lack the resources. Thus, the nation's Safe Drinking Water Act allows less trained, often amateur people, to operate these tiny water systems. What the USA Today piece never really mentioned, all right, was about the lack of funds. It alluded to the why. Take the Flint, Michigan expose on the lead and the outdated inferior pipes in their drinking water. I have watched the entire hearings on C-SPAN a year ago. How many times did those who did not do their jobs properly have to explain to the Congress people that there was not enough money? How many times? In the USA newspaper piece, they stated that, quote, ever-shrinking tax rolls and a median household income at about half the national average in many communities meant that there was little money available to shore up decaying infrastructure, unquote. Thus, leaks occur over and over. So what Uncle Sam will do is give out some funding to struggling communities, but drinking water experts state categorically that the need outstrips the money being given out. And loans cannot help utilities because they will not be able to pay them back anyway. You see, here's the deal. An EPA assessment in 2013 estimated that infrastructure needs for small water systems would total $64.5 billion over 20 years. Last time that I looked, at least half of our federal tax revenues to Uncle Sam, which is over $600 billion a year, goes for military spending. $600 billion a year since we invaded and occupied Iraq. Imagine all the infrastructure upgrades that our towns and cities could complete, even if a small portion of that military spending was diverted to block grants through revenue sharing, money that was never to be repaid, by the way. You see, it costs you and me, taxpayers, over $1 million a year to keep one soldier in Afghanistan and Iraq. How many modern water pipes and purer drinking water can $1 million subsidize? Yet this gung-ho, jingoistic government and mainstream media keep drumming that we are at war. Oh, really? When did Congress declare war last? Let's see. World War II. After that, the military-industrial empire has conned Americans into thinking Vietnam, Korea, and more recently Afghanistan and Iraq, and soon to be Syria, were wars we need to be in for our defense. They tell you that close to 1,000 bases we have in over 100 different countries are necessary for our nation's defense. Believe that, and I have a bridge in Brooklyn you can purchase. So, you know, stop supporting this two-party bunch of empire stooges and start thinking right. Get out on the street corners of your towns and cities to demand drastic cuts in military spending, an end to our unnecessary bases worldwide, and bringing back both our military personnel and our sanity to our foreign policy. Thank you.
Hello, Chuck. I'm back. My recommended list for tonight, number one, the Corbett Report. How do we counter military worship? Also recommended, John Barber's film, The American Media, and The Second Assassination of John F. Kennedy, now available on Amazon. Also recommended, False Flag Weekly News, every Friday morning, YouTube, with Kevin Barrett and Tony Hall. Also, Truth Stream Media. And I would like to let you all know that the first edition of Penn Magazine is now online at pennmagazine.us, P-E-N-N magazine.us. In this inaugural issue, we have many stories about the guests of the New American Dream Radio Show, Mickey Z, Richard Flamer, Jim Fetzer, Frank Cordero, Phil Ferruccio, Karen Kitkowski, Anthony Rayson, and more. We invite you to take a look at pennmagazine.us. And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. And now, The Americans. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal.
Thank you.
Seals, Rangers, Green Berets, the best this country has to offer, right at the front of any parade, on TV, on the ball field, holding the flag, singing the anthem. What do the brightest, the strongest, the best that America has, what do they do? Repair sidewalks and schools and homes in poor neighborhoods? Tell children the truth about their history? No. They swim underwater, rappel, parachute, and then kill. They kill people they have been told are our enemies, break their skulls, slice their throats, stomp their faces, stab their hearts, shoot and explode their heads. The best America has to offer. And for what reason, we have no idea. We would also like to shout out to those men and women serving in 10,000 countries and municipalities, islands, peninsulas, knolls, glens, gullies, inlets, deltas, fjords, and firths overseas, serving in Berlin and Aachen and Baden and Ufen and Fufen and and Deerdorf und Donden und Dasher und Prancer und Donder and Blitzen. We need you. For what reason, we have no idea, but thank you for all you do, and we are pleased to send you 50% of our tax dollars. For what reason, we have no idea, but because you are there and they thank you at ball games and on beer commercials, we thank you for all you do. For what reason, we have no idea. No U.S. soldier who died in Afghanistan died for any American's freedom. In fact, freedom in America has steadily eroded since the bogus war on terror was declared and the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan was undertaken. U.S. soldiers who died in Afghanistan didn't die defending the United States, protecting Americans from Afghan attacks, fighting over there so we wouldn't have to fight over here, keeping Americans safe from terrorists, or avenging 9/11. U.S. soldiers died unnecessarily, duped in vain and for a lie. They died for the imperial presidency. They died for the U.S. empire. They died for the national security state. They died for the military-industrial complex. They died for a belligerent, reckless, and meddling U.S. foreign policy. They died for no one's freedom.
CWG Press, a small press with big ideas. Chuck Gregory is the publisher of CWG Press. He founded it in 2006 and has published 26 books so far.
CWG Press, small but mighty, fighting for the world, taking on the empire.
CWG Press authors include Corbin Fowler, Mickey Z, Bruce Davis, and Mike Polichek.
I'm Chuck Gregory, and I'd like to describe a recent edition from a member of the audience by my father, Wayne L. Gregory. Dad penned his memories of over 100 actors and actresses, theater names we all recognize, remembering live performances he'd seen in a span of over 50 years. Currently, CWG Press is publishing the Geronimo's Revenge trilogy by my co-host, Mike Polichek. The second book, Crusher in Wonderland, will be available as of October 2, 2017.
You are in the middle of an American-Russian novel. You better believe it. All you need is more vodka. And the next time you are sitting at the Thanksgiving adult big table, and your brother-in-law tries to send you to Siberia with a roll of his eyes, we'll take a few books with you from CWG Press. So here we go. Scooch up to the samovar with a nice warm drink in your hands. Maybe keep your hat and boots on. And listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice while you read something from CWG Press.
Hello, this is Rachel again. Today I am going to share another personal poem. It is entitled Lost. Again, you can find me on Facebook, Rachel Flow Diva Finley, on Instagram and Twitter at Flow Diva Flow. And I am a member of Chaos Theory, which you can find as The Chaos Theory Online on all social media. There is a prayer in my throat that refuses to make its way to my lips. I can hear my father's voice in the distance, but I can't make out the words. And right now, I need his guidance more than Saharan soil needs rain. I find myself lost in the labyrinth of my own life, surrounded by so many funhouse mirrors that I no longer recognize myself. When the only open door is the one you don't want to take, do you pass through it anyway? Or do you pound your head against the closed one and hope that there is one on the side?
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
We live in a world where children are most often unprotected and preyed upon in the most horrific ways. Children who grow up to tell their stories. It is time for the world to listen. My name is Veni Kosius. I am a cult and child abuse survivor turned thriver. From religious abuse to abuses enacted in the youth reform system to abusive government-funded programs and more, I am bringing you trauma survival stories which the mainstream media rarely covers. Support freedomslips.com and tune into my show, Survivor Voices, every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember, whatever you do to the least among you, you do unto yourselves.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving, and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from the Des Moines Catholic Worker in Des Moines, Iowa. Frank is a former Catholic priest, former prisoner of war fighting against the U.S. military machine. And now Frank Cordero speaking with Chuck Gregory, Des Moines and Fort Lauderdale.
Yo, Chuck.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
Warren. But hold on here, I'm at the worker house, and I'm covering for what we call about shower head, which is the person who's supposed to be in the kitchen doing the dishes, and then there's the point person for everything during the shift. So you go to person. I ensconced myself away onto the staircase, and now I'm in the back staircase talking to you, Chuck.
Okay.
Got a really difficult letter from Jess. It was addressed to myself and her mother and her father and her uncle, and saying that she didn't think she was going to get back home. that wasn't going to wait for to get arrested, you know, the FBI to act on their confessions. And they said there was too much work to be done and just felt it necessary to do it away from Des Moines, from where a lot of people, you know, that they know will be caught up and stuff.
Right.
So that's a very hard pill to hear, take from the people who love her the most.
Yep.
So
measuring
that. I'm measuring that. Ruby's folks are in the same situation. So, gosh, I'm just got a big hole in my gut and heart, and I want to take some time to reflect on what it all means. Yeah, that's what's going on, Jack.
Well, the good thing about that is that she's okay.
That is the good thing, and that they're both in control of their own destiny. And she was very clear that they were following their heart and their spirit, and what they felt compelled and need to do. Am I? Again, I'm just betting that this wonderful woman knows that she's going to put herself in risk and liability, in which it's her words about I'm not coming home and probably never will could very well be true.
Yeah.
And I know that they're serious about what they're doing and who they are and the spirits that lead them, that they'll do this at the point of great personal risk.
Yep.
Up to and including life. That's a rare, those are rare spirits to be next to and part of. And then I'm reminded, again, I can't help but always compare this from the background of where I'm living, that in the state of Iowa, again, I've told this before, we sent 16,000 Iowans to fight in these idiot wars post 9/11. Mm. 98 of them have come back killed. So here we have two young women who are on the side of the planet and creation and not killing, yet warriors every bit as much as anyone we sent to the Middle East. We need to measure that and respect that sacrifice on both sides, and then measure our own by the sacrifice.
Yeah,
that's how it's done. That's how it was taught to me, and that's how they're teaching it to me right now. So I speak of the greatest and glowing things and feelings for them. I also have a great personal loss that I have to grapple with. So talking to you is part of it.
Well,
continue to cook the soup is part of it. Planning our next action is part of it.
Yeah.
Living with a hole in my heart, the new normal. And again, I guess I don't know why I keep bouncing off the military model, but there's a hell of a lot of families in this country whose folks are abroad, and a lot of them don't know what they're doing. And some of them are in special services, and they take risk. You know, they're killers, there's no doubt about it, but they too can be killed. And that's a terrible thing to be putting people out there to kill. It's equally dreadful personally to feel the loss of someone you love who's risking their lives in nonviolent ways to save the planet. It just ain't easy.
It certainly isn't.
It just ain't easy. Yeah.
It certainly isn't, Frank. But
so I hope. Yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm rambling.
Well,
I'm just rambling.
You know, I'm so sorry. But at the same time, I'm really relieved because I had visions that, you know, that they had been grabbed up and disappeared. They'd been hauled off to Gitmo. Who knows? You know, and it sounds as though
your mind goes crazy.
Yeah.
Your mind does go crazy. Yeah, it does. I'm at this point confident they're still in control of their own destiny and they're doing what they need to be doing. I do, and I'm also confident that's not the last I'm going to hear from Jessica.
Yeah.
So I'm 2 days into this next week I might, you know, again, just for a reference, that Kubler-Ross lady and those five stages, man, I can shift through three of them and before taking a breath sometimes. Uh-huh. I am so angry. I'm so, all right, let's cut a deal. Oh, this is happening, you know, but acceptance, I haven't yet got to. So I'm trying to, it's, this one's going to take a while to figure out.
Yeah.
For me. No, yeah. No, so. No. Yeah. So I have an empty gut. So I don't know if I have a lot more to say.
Okay. Well,
Chuck, thanks. And I'm looking forward to seeing you. And we're going to take you to Creighton and, you know, show you how Catholics protest.
Yes. I'm looking forward to that.
All of that's good.
It's less than a week away now.
I know. It's going to happen. So
yeah,
that'll be cool.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right, Chuck.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our next guest of the show is Richard Flamer. Richard Flamer joins us each month from the Catholic Worker in Chiapas, Mexico, in San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas, Mexico. And we're going to hear now from Richard Flamer in Chiapas.
This evening, I wanted to talk about the earthquakes in Oaxaca and Mexico City. The tremors after the earthquake of Oaxaca and Chiapas of September 7th continue. Over 7,000 tremors, some as large as 6.1 on the Richter scale, keep the population on edge. My father-in-law, along with many of the inhabitants of Pixtal Tepec, sleeps outdoors when it's raining. He ducks under a nearby carport. After the quake of 8.2, the response from the federal government, along with the Catholic Church and the civilian population, was immediate. Food, medicine, and doctors came rushing into the region. However, the distribution of the supplies was taken over by the military. The following weeks, aid came in from numerous countries. Cuba joined with China to send a portable clinic, doctors and nurses, with over 2,500 patients attended in the 3 weeks subsequent to the disaster. A group of nuns from the U.S. brought in two plane loads of food, medicine, and potable water. Chile, with its extensive experience of quakes, brought in tents, cots, and a water treatment plant. The Mennonites of northern Mexico brought tools, trailers, materials, and a crew, which erected some 40 temporary metal sheds, which included two doors and two windows. Numerous small pickups have come to the village, bringing clothes, fresh fish from the nearby Pacific Ocean, and canned goods. Even as the broken bricks and crumbled concrete are collected by heavy equipment and hauled by dump trucks, some of the damaged walls and roofs are continuing to fall. That is, the tremors are shaking already damaged walls. The initial rubble collected was hauled to the riverside to correct the erosion of years. The federal government stepped in to halt the trucks, with the spokesman declaiming the rubble was contaminating the river. Though there's no waste treatment plant in the town, so most folks just run a drain line from their toilets into the river. A small group of pet lovers came with three pickups laden with dog food, followed by 10 veterinarians who went house to house treating dogs and cats with medical supplies provided free, courtesy of two larger private pet clinics of Veracruz. The veterinarians got to town a week before the National Health Services, who also went house to house. The first time collecting information, with a second pilgrimage of nurses who provided injections for influenza, tetanus, and an antibiotic on those who requested. Juchitán, Tehuantepec, Ixtepec, Union Hidalgo, and 20 other small isolated towns have been affected. Some, like Santo Domingo, are inaccessible by vehicles, with the military dropping off supplies including food, water, and medicine, with the evacuation of several wounded to local hospitals. Some of the isolated villages were kept in contact through the use of social media. The social media, especially Facebook and Messenger, were very effective in various ways. Medicines were collected and distributed by motorcyclists. Notifications of damaged buildings with the possibility of people hurt and under the rubble were reported to the military. Messages about where to find food and potable water were passed on. The collection of food, medicine, and water was aided by messages sent from collection points. The Mexican military, especially the Marines, were terrific in coordinating rescue efforts for the first few days. After the first week, the aid started flowing in with the arrival of tractor trailers coming in from all parts of Mexico. In subsequent weeks, the civil authorities of both state and municipalities began to abuse the exterior services, hoarding the supplies for future gifts from their political party. The Marines stepped in with the distribution again. The nearby Army base with its long runway started receiving the foreign aid coming in by the Chilean rescue workers, the Chinese with tarps and tents, the Cubans with their portable hospital all came to help. I'm always surprised at the dignity, the honor, the coming together of strangers, yet the simultaneous pettiness, criminality, the veniality of the same people. A week after the quake, my wife, Per Sully, and I took tools, medicine, and food to the village of East Altepec. The response of my friends was terrific and immediate. My in-law's response was equally admirable. Per Sully's parents, her numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins all live in old houses, mostly of adobe in the middle of East Altepec. Araceli and her mother immediately set to dividing the goods into bags. 12 families the following day received those bags. We had called a few days before leaving our farm to get a list of medicines for the family and neighbors. I was able to buy sufficient meds for the varied cases of diabetes, high blood pressure, etc. The 12 families to survive for another month. During the quake, the two local pharmacies were demolished. The next closest pharmacy is 30 miles away on a road now closed to traffic. The tools that I bought were shared amongst the neighbors who worked together to start the cleanup. I managed to get some wheelbarrows, rakes, shovels, tarps, and various woodworking tools from my friends here in San Cristobal. Simultaneously, two relatives of Araceli went from collection point to collection point looking for whatever was handed out. The irony is that both relatives were only visiting and came to see what they could scavenge. They refused to share any of the goods they collected, packing them up for delivery to their homes by the postal service. The trek takes us 5 or 6 hours to drive. This next trip will be a six-hour journey with a trailer filled with foreign lumber. The truck itself will include 60 pounds of fresh fruit, 60 of tomatoes, 60 of onions, and enough medicine for the 12 families for another 30 days. Along with the goods, I will have another $1,000 for labor. I like to help some of the older men and young folks, both boys and girls, to sort of kickstart the economy. 58,000 houses and apartments were damaged beyond repair in Chiapas, Oaxaca, and Mexico City. Over 250,000 affected people are living with neighbors under tents or under tarps on the street. Of the 12 families affected on the street of Araceli's parents, as of this weekend of November 6th, only one family is out under a temporary shed. With the aid of friends, all the neighbors, they have moved into vacant structures that have been rehabilitated or with family. This last trip, Araceli and I took not only the fruits and vegetables and meds, but tools for cutting metal for the rebar. And while I was there, I held classes for in how to mix concrete in the proper proportions, how to bend the rebar, where to put it, that sort of thing. And I'm planning another trip in 2 weeks, mostly to bring another mason and his helper to fix up 2 more houses that were damaged but can be fairly quickly rebuilt. With those two, that solves another problem that I've seen since this last visit. There's so few masons in the town, and there's things like lumber, which you can't find because East Altepec, that part of Oaxaca, is all desert. So I'll be taking the tools for the woodworking as well, and probably take that mason and his assistant, pay them a little extra, and we'll put them up at Araceli's parents' place and have them fix those 2 other houses, and that'll get all the families out from under the carport. And it's a kind of relatively safe structure. And my own sense is all we can do is limit the help. But in this one street where we're working with those 12 families, it's a close-knit community. And I'm so impressed with the way they've responded. And they don't need that much help, mostly technical. The government is now giving them credit for buying materials, but there's no money for labor. So it seems like that's my job over the next couple of months, to raise money for the labor to get those new houses built. So that's what I've been doing here last month and a half.
Well, Richard, you certainly have been busy with this. My God, it's wonderful thing that you're doing, helping these people, and really putting in time, putting in money, putting in hard work.
For me, it's all about the Sermon on the Mount, and we need to help those who need it. Nobody should, this world's rich enough that nobody should starve. Nobody should be without a shelter. And it seems to me that that's the least we can do. I'm always convinced that I'm not doing enough, but for right now, it's what I can do. Besides, I'm 70 years old, and I'm not going to carry concrete blocks anymore. But I can give classes.
Yeah. Well, as before I let you go, I'd like you to give out the address where people can send donations once again.
Sure. Care of Holy Family, it's the Chiapas Project, or Richard Flamer, either one. Care of Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715-1715 Izzard Street, Izard Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68100. And like I said, we could sure use the money.
I'm sure. Well, thanks. It's wonderful to speak to you as always. And hey, keep up the good work. And we'll talk to you again next month.
Blessings to all. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. We got cut off at the end of last segment. So we're going to try once again to bring you Rachel Finley.
Hello, this is Rachel again. Today I am going to share another personal poem. It is entitled Lost. Again, you can find me on Facebook, Rachel Flow Diva Finley, on Instagram and Twitter at Flow Diva Flow. And I am a member of Chaos Theory, which you can find as The Chaos Theory online on all social media. There is a prayer in my throat that refuses to make its way to my lips. I can hear my father's voice in the distance, but I can't make out the words. And right now, I need his guidance more than Saharan soil needs rain. I find myself lost in the labyrinth of my own life, surrounded by so many funhouse mirrors that I no longer recognize myself. When the only open door is the one you don't want to take, do you pass through it anyway? Or do you pound your head against the closed one and hope that there is someone on the other side to open it? When you stand somewhere between giving in and giving up, it is hard not to simply give out. I know that my ancestors faced harder times than these with a fiddler's grace and the sweet grit of cornbread. I'm not sure that I can confront ugliness with that kind of beauty. I fight like a girl, my enemy's skin beneath my nails and hair between my fingers, tears streaming down my face, rage roaring up in my chest, and high-pitched wails. I have no tiger blood in my veins. I'm just human and frail. Unbreakable, fighting not to be broken, searching for one moment of certainty in a sea of uncertainty, although my net frequently comes up empty. And at times, I find it hard to stand, never having gained my sea legs. But there is this seed planted within me that refuses to stop growing despite the lack of light. In times like this, I borrow her roots to keep me grounded, and thank God that although I can no longer ask my father for advice, I can still feel his love for me and know that despite all of my flaws and weaknesses.
Thank you, Rick.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Am Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft gun pointed to action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific War Time this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
General Quarters, all hands on your battle station.
Be nervous, count your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
You who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer is a retired philosophy professor. He lives in Madison, Wisconsin. He's a reporter, a radio show host, a writer, and we're going to hear from Jim Fetzer in Madison, Wisconsin, right about now.
Chuck and Mike, it's great to be here with you again. I've been pondering about the timing of the Las Vegas attack and this little church in Texas, where they're both completely fraudulent. In Las Vegas, it was a movie. They had a pre-recorded soundtrack that was a real machine gun, real automatic weapons, real bullet strike on the ground that was played over the PA system and synchronized with video special effects, so that those who were there would think the sound and the lights flashing and the mandalay on the fourth floor simulating a machine gun, the floors above, three light flashes simulating modern three-shot bursts from military weapons. There was even a fellow in the crowd who was turning as though he was firing, and you saw light flashes, but there were no bullets. They had the crowd seated with crisis actors. Crowds on demand have been recruiting 15 days before. George Soros had put a $41 million short on the Mandalay Bay MGM, meaning that when if its stock dropped, he'd make a bundle. The chief executive officer, Jay Murin, sold off 80% of his holdings in Mandalay Bay, MGM, in order to buy it back up when the stock dropped and make a bundle. We had a warning coming on 4chan from an anonymous source, John, talking about the idea to put these scanners like we have in airports and all those casinos and resorts in Las Vegas, and then move to other public places like schools and churches. So here we have a church event, and it's totally fraudulent as well. I mean, let me tell you about that. We have NBC announcing at least 27 dead, but they wrote the story and published it the night before at 9:51. We have another early report where they only had 20 dead and 30 injured. We got a woman who's giving an inconsistent report officially. The guy walked into the, through the church door and started shooting. According to her, it was fired from the roof. This is reminiscent of Jesus Campos, who was supposed to be the security guard who encountered Paddock. According to the official account, the first account, the first version, call it Paddock 1.0, he came to the room and interrupted him when he was firing, on the crowd, which led him to shoot Campos and then turn his gun on himself and commit suicide. The scene, of course, is staged because you have blood underneath the shells. In other words, presumably when he's done dead, he stops firing. So the blood would have been on top of the shells, but they were just setting up a scene. They were careless about it. They even put down shell casings that were from blanks, which have a crimp cartridge, and from CO2 cartridges for gas-propelled pellet guns. I mean, the whole thing was completely ridiculous. They revised the story, however, to have Campos encounter Paddock before he began shooting, where Paddock got upset and fired 200 rounds down the hallway. Now, does anyone think you could fire 200 rounds down the hallway of a luxury hotel and nobody would notice? I mean, there are cameras everywhere in these hotels. Las Vegas is a hugely surveilled setting. So we know all of this is complete poppycock. We have military experts reporting. They've reviewed the videos of the patients in the hospitals, and none of them has a real wound. All of them are actors, complimented by an American trauma surgeon observing they're not even connected to the diagnostic equipment that would monitor their blood pressure or their IV drips. Many of them are laughing during the event. I have a student who surveyed 33 videos and found there were lots of sounds of shots, but no actual shots, no one being hit. I have another student who has been looking at the obituaries and finds are based on people who died in other states or on other dates or from different causes. Go to my blog, jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, and just work backwards. Or if you want an overview, Scott Bennett, who's a former Army Intel and PsyOps officer, and I did a two-hour and 20-minute interview with Kerry Cassidy, Project Camelot, called Vegas Update with Dr. James Fetzer and Scott Bennett. Check that out. You can also find my last show on Rents on YouTube under the heading Jeff Rents Fired Me for this show, where I brought on an expert in audiovisual who've been studying the audio and who confirmed that it was definitely pre-recorded. It was too high quality, 24-bit, in order to ensure that the little cell phones and laptops at the concert would be picked up. We now have, of course, the FBI is wiping those laptops and cell phones clean. I mean, this is a monstrous hoax, very elaborate. And I've been wondering, about the church shooting. Because we not only have these preliminary reports and inconsistent, we have now the story that the hero who's supposed to have chased the shooter is a Jewish cowboy, and the killer, Kevin Patrick Kelly, is supposed to be a Muslim convert. They claim the same thing of Paddock, that he was a convert to Islam. Listen, this is what the Israelis do. This shows you it's a Mossad op. On 9/11, between the destruction of the South Tower and the North, they showed videos of Palestinians rejoicing. They even claimed that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine had claimed responsibility, which was absurd. Intelligence experts around the world agreed there were only two agencies in the world that could have pulled it off. One was the CIA, the other was the Mossad. And on 9/11, they were acting together. If you want an overview of 9/11, go to Brian Ruhe, R-U-H-E, comma, 9/11, 9/11, and you'll have a two-hour presentation where I cover virtually every aspect of 9/11. We now have the claim that they have a gruesome video of what happened here. Well, if they have a gruesome video, it must be fake, because I've looked at the reports, the videos they're broadcasting out of this very strange little church, where in fact they're set up like a rock band, where they have a Harley Davidson where you'd expect the altar to be, with a bouquet of flowers. I mean, it's bizarre in the extreme. So don't be taken in, don't be played. In fact, I do the Goldfish Report with Louisa on Monday mornings. And of course we were discussing this, and it was a very intriguing, because it turns out Louisa did makeup for these kinds of drills. She even showed a photograph where she had her throat slit. But of course it was all imaginary. So we can expect they're gonna produce a Hollywood little video. And indeed, I was just astonished at the quality of the production they were putting out there, because, you know, it's better, more high def than you'd find on NBC. Now, one of the commentators on our last show from Monday, Four Leaf Clover, wrote, "For your information, I am from San Antonio. Sometime last month, I think it was around October 25th, an announcement came on the local radio telling people not to worry or panic if we saw clusters of ambulances, police cars, and bloody victims in various parts of the city, in particular near the airport. They said it was all part of a live-action drill with many hundreds of participants, and they'd be in full makeup with blood, etc. I thought, oh, what's coming? This Sutherland place is a town I've never heard, and it's about 15 miles outside of San Antonio down Highway 87. I went up and down that stretch of road right to where that town is supposed to be, looking for an old farmhouse venue where my friend was having a wedding. I was lost for at least 40 minutes going back and forth off Highway 87 in the whole area, looking for this obscure place or at least something or someone where I could stop and ask for help. But it's nothing but empty ranch land and a few abandoned old warehouses. So when the media says it's hard to explain how small this town is, I have to laugh. Yeah, it's so small. It's invisible, because I drove through their main intersection at 87 and 539, and it was Deadsville. This was in April. Well, I figured it out why they timed it. We've just had Garth Brooks win the Country Music Award, and it was a very sober event, right? Because they were grieving for those who died, allegedly, at a country music concert in Las Vegas, and now in a Southern Baptist church. So this is a pitch designed to draw in the Southern Baptists, evangelicals, and others who believe in country Western music, for example, to support gun control. In fact, it turns out Dianne Feinstein has introduced a huge, sweeping gun control agenda. But the fact of the matter is, as the Attorney General of Texas observed at the time, in parties there, even on the official account, if there had been parties there with concealed carry, they would have taken this guy out. Even the chase with a fake Jewish cowboy is supposed to have involved a rifle that caused him to surrender. So we don't need fewer guns, we need more. In fact, these attacks are typically taken in gun-free zones. So it's all staged. Look what happens in Chicago, where they have some of the most stringent gun laws in the country. Has that reduced the crime rate? Absolutely not. And we know when guns are banned, homicides go up. Jim Fetzer, Mike, Chuck, thanks. Great to be with you today.
Our next guest of the show is Thomas Wortman. Thomas Wortman is the director of the Ohio MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. So Thomas joins us each month from Cleveland, Ohio, and we're going to try to contact Thomas Wortman in Cleveland right about now.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Thomas. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show. And if this is working, I think something's wrong here. Hang on. I've got to get you
okay.
Mixed up. I may have to call you back. Hang on a second.
No problem.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
We live in a world where children are most often unprotected and preyed upon in the most horrific ways. Children who grow up to tell their stories. It is time for the world to listen. My name is Venny Kosius. I am a cult and child abuse survivor turned thriver. From religious abuse to abuses enacted in the youth reform system to abusive government-funded programs and more, I am bringing you trauma survival stories which the mainstream media rarely covers. Support freedomslips.com and tune into my show, Survivor Voices, every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember, whatever you do to the least among you, you do unto yourselves.
Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Everyone, we are back, and well, hopefully we are back, and
Chuck, I'm here.
Okay, good. Go for it.
A salute to veterans and Veterans Day. Thank you for all you do for killing 6 million American Indians, for killing 3,000 citizens of Panama in December 1989, for murdering thousands, millions of people in Iraq and Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Vietnam, Syria, Chile, El Salvador, the Philippines, and on and on and on. You are American-style heroes. You are insane, psychotic killers who will do whatever anyone tells you to do. You are Americans through and through. Thank you for all you have done and continue to do. This opioid's for you.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. We continue with the story of Johnny Moon, a third grader on his way to school on Friday, November 22nd, 1963. Someone woke up very early in the morning, went right to the guns to see they were still there, all right and safe and clean and happy. Someone called someone and talked over a final note that had kept them from sleeping past 3 that morning. Someone else awakened with a smile to think of the cumulative power of all the months of preparations finally coming to fruition. Two persons worried that all the details were in place and what could possibly go wrong. One person woke up at the alarm clock, wondering for a moment where he was, and rolled to the bed table to check departure times once again. Someone else asked someone at the end of breakfast, "What about the children?" "I'm not sure I know what you're talking about," was the only response, before they crumpled white napkins and tossed them along with a couple dollar bills on the plates and went off to meet the plane. "Strong boys make strong men, makes a strong country," Johnny said out loud to himself as he pounded on in between the old people and other kids and dogs headed towards St. Luke's for 8 o'clock mass. He snuffed up snot, knowing it would be his last chance for a while. Johnny chugged on, his head down, pennies and dimes smothered forever, fossils inside his sweaty wool mitten. He slid on the ice with his hands out. "Squaw Valley," he whispered to himself, past the side entrance of the church. It would have led right to where his class sat for mass, but they had to go in the front door. Like gentlemen and young ladies, not someone sneaking into the beer joint from the alley. Johnny mentally checked his soul and decided it was still white from confession last Wednesday. He put his head down farther and pumped his left arm harder to turn right around the sternly cut hedge. "Hey, skis, skis!" Johnny looked up and around. "Hey, wait up!" One of the old people pulled the front door. Johnny saw the sharp brightness inside, framed inside the darkness outside like matting on a picture. The cherubs playing in the painting on the convex ceiling above the altar way in front. The bells rang, insisted, nagged, implored. Ding, dong, 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 ding, ding, dong. Johnny found an opening in the foot traffic. Headed for it like Jim Taylor, a hand on his sleeve tugged at him. "Hey, we're early." Johnny looked annoyed and saw Jimmy Purple. "Moon skis," Jimmy said. "Where you going?" "Church." Johnny looked at Jimmy, shook off his grip. "There's lots of time," Jimmy said. "Let's skip." "Hemenu the Omnipotent," Jimmy said, putting his face close to Johnny's, and Johnny pulled back. Jimmy referred to the animated movie the school had seen in the school basement, called Hemo the Magnificent, about the blood in the body, how it is powerful, gives life. The movie took them on an incredible trip through the body along the bloodstream. Johnny and Jimmy had made a good joke for themselves after the movie that they'd repeated the whole rest of the day about pretending to be riding in blood as they walked through the halls. Jimmy asked Johnny if he'd seen Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea that week, how Admiral Nelson had flown the flying submarine. Johnny shook his head. Mr. Wizard? Asked Jimmy. The Ghosts and Dreams whatchamajig thing they had? Johnny said no, he'd been out playing. My favorite Martian? Jimmy grew impatient. Not this week, said Johnny. Okay, said Jimmy. Did you see where Uncle Martin and Tim go in that one time machine? Johnny looked toward the church, back to Jimmy, back to the church door, and Johnny said. He knew Jimmy didn't want to go into church. He said every time he goes in there, he feels some kids from the ghost class pushing him and poking him in the sides, trying to get him mad and in trouble. And Jimmy was scared of the cherubs on the ceiling above the altar, because they made him think of the ghost class. And when he would get scared, he would point at the cherubs and call them Johnny, even though they all looked like girls. Probably to make himself feel better. The ghost class with ghost nuns was the very first class coming through the school. Back in the, long time ago. They were all downstairs in the kitchen, next to the gym, and the stage, and the locker room, and the boiler room. They were making paper mache turkey heads Thanksgiving, they say. The old boiler that the priest had got from another school that bought a new one exploded. It shot hot air and fire right through the cement wall from the boiler room, right into the kitchen, and burned all the kids and the nuns right in place like Bombay. And now they just ran everywhere, wherever they wanted, all day long. The two nuns who were with them chased them all over the school all day long, except when they take breaks to sit on the roof of the priest's garage to watch Sister Mark pitch kickball. That's what Mark says. Johnny turned from Jimmy, headed toward the open door, mixing with the horde of kids, parents, old people. Johnny dipped three fingers into the holy water sponge inside the door and touched himself on the right places. One finger was for people who thought they were too good for God. Two fingers were for the Pope, bishops, cardinals only. It's a rule. Johnny ripped at his hat and gloves in a well-worn flurry, revealing red face and hands like the embers of a campfire. He gripped the wooden railing on the side and pounded up the hard vinyl steps. All steps were stomps. Each boy and girl jabbered like a monkey in a zoo, and they pounded up the stairs like so many cattle headed to mass and clumped their feet like horses. The girls searched and traded and made last-second alterations and inventions to put something in their heads. A napkin, a handkerchief, with bobby pins, before daring to show themselves to God inside. Johnny pushed through the wooden temple doors, then headed left, smelling the old people section in the back, like cigarettes, coffee, Rolaids, gas. Rounded the corner, passing under the ivory icons for the Stations of the Cross, then began smelling the incense and the burning white and red candles that cost $1 and $5, depending on what you needed. Lots of times, the old people would be up there lighting candles and banging coins down the metal tube that were as loud as Hiroshima, Johnny's sister said. He headed down the side aisle, crushed his cap at his side, felt again for the coins in the other fist. Johnny put the brakes on to keep from breaking into a jog down the incline that resembled the angle of the Rialto Isles. Jimmy bumped into him from behind. Sorry, Jimmy said. Watch it, jeez, fucker. I said sorry. Johnny then began to pick up his feet, not wishing to sound like someone going out to feed the cows. Johnny and Jimmy both half genuflected, bowed their heads, blessed themselves, and slid into the last two spots of the third row of third graders. They knelt on the red cushion kneeler, crossed themselves, bowed their heads, crossed themselves, then slid back onto the wooden pew, all the while keeping their heads down like they knew they shouldn't even be alive, but they were, and sorry, but, well, what could they do about it? Johnny looked at the altar, took a deep breath, kept his eyes on the altar, and began placing himself in the presence of God while searching his pockets for a place to stick his 15 cents so he didn't lose it. He took a deep breath, the way Sister had said, closed his eyes, and began to drift away from the dock, like she said, drifting, breathing, lying back in the boat in the moonlight, listening to the crickets and the owl. Johnny opened his eyes and saw that everything around him was the same. Jimmy had his arm on the outer armrest like he was in a bank, not church. But Johnny didn't feel like saying anything. "Got your money this time?" Jimmy asked with a knowing smirk. Johnny showed him the open mitten with the pennies and dime. Jimmy shot an elbow into the aisle, turned around to growl at the empty pew behind him, then started playing with the metal hat snaps that they weren't supposed to use for their hats because, Jimmy snapped the holder. It echoed around church. They both put their heads down, tried not to show they were breathing by their backs moving up and down. They waited, then raised their heads. "That's not 15. Let me see," Jimmy hissed. Johnny showed him the open mitten, and the dime fell onto the floor. At the sound, all the third grade girls in the world turned around and glared. The coin took off. Johnny turned red. The 10 cents rolled under the next pew downhill, then hit a pew leg and began to spin. The spinning noise echoed, louder than the coughing, grunting old people. The frantic bells, the cars honking outside. Johnny watched the dime spin. It stopped. He slid ahead, just hanging by the edge of his butt to the pew, then lunged with his knees for the red kneeler. Johnny dived under, grazing the seat with his head. In the darkness, he reached and grabbed a girl's leg. The leg shook, and he let go. "Oh!" he heard, squealing above him. A head came down from the pew, just ahead. "Ew! Sister!" He saw the silver sparkling in the dim light from the stained glass windows. Shinny toward it on his stomach. He reached, almost. Oh! He urged his body forward, feeling boot slush go down his neck. He reached one finger to the coin, pinned it to the floor, pulled it in. "Pull me back," Johnny whispered to Jimmy. "Pull me back! Pull me out! Help!" Johnny lunged backward on his stomach. Oh, he grunted. Got his legs up over the kneeler, found his seat, breathing heavy, sweat on his forehead. He looked at Jimmy and smiled, holding up the coins in his hand. "Got it," Johnny said. "See?" Jimmy wasn't looking at Johnny or his money, but over Johnny's shoulder, like he was watching the birds alone at night at home with all the lights off, and he saw a beak sticking through the front door. Johnny looked over his right shoulder, and he saw a finger, the giant pointer finger of Sister Mark, as if it were pointing at him from up on the Rialto screen in 3D, down at him, seated in the front row and peeing on the floor with both hands, Jonathan Moon. This made it worse. Sister Mark really thought Johnny's name was Moon. Sister Mark's face shined red, throbbing within this wimple face mask headpiece, like a cat with its face stuck in the back door, headed out. Johnny's face swelled and gorged with horror, silently screaming as if a Negro were climbing in the bathroom window in the middle of the night. Sister hissed. "You report to my room after mass, young man," and then whipped around and sidled back down the row, holding up her robes with one hand, fingering her beads with the other. Johnny turned around. He stared straight ahead like he'd been shot, but not sure yet where the bullet went in. He squeezed his 15 cents and a tear slid down one cheek. One of the fourth grade boys from the street curb pulled the red velvet cord at the opening to the sacristy, and the bells rang. Everyone stood. The two fourth grade boys led Father out from the back room. They came around to the front to bow to the altar and kneel. Then Father marched straight up to the altar to begin his private meeting with his friend God. The green vestments and the red candles burning in front of the statues of Mary and Joseph on either side set the stage, along with the flowers collected by the Catholic daughters from the funerals from the previous week, and the American flag next to the altar, with the cherubs and the chimes. Johnny tried to follow along. Watch the two older boys to see how they worked. Next year, they would be learning to serve when they were in Sister Mark's class. At least they were supposed to. You had to learn a lot of prayers and serve at either daily 5:30 p.m. Mass with the old people or the 8 a.m. Mass with the whole world. And unless there was a nuclear war with the Russians and the world ended and he didn't have to. That's what Sister Mark told the fourth graders. That's what Johnny's brother had confirmed. Jimmy looked to see if Sister was watching and put one of his feet up on the kneeler, which didn't allow Johnny or the others in the row to push the kneeler up, cut them at the shins. Johnny watched the action on the altar and began to wonder if he'd fasted long enough to be able to take communion. See, he had ice cream, strawberry swirl cake flavor while watching my three sons, then nothing. But, well, was that long enough? Oh, shit, he put his hand immediately over his mouth at the bad word thought. He ate a spoonful of meatloaf after the ice cream. If it was after midnight, it would be on Friday. He couldn't eat meat on Friday, or he'd go to hell if he died before getting to confession again. One, two, three, he began flicking his fingers out of his fist to count the hours. If he didn't go up with the group, everyone would know he'd done something wrong. Johnny smelled Smith Brothers cherry cough drops, looked to see that Jimmy was sucking one in his cheek. You weren't supposed to. At the Hosanna, everyone knelt. Jimmy looked behind Johnny down at their nun, Sister Mary Michael, with her head bowed and half sat back on the pew. Johnny pressed his fists together with his money still trapped inside the sweaty mitten. At the homily, the children all watched, intent, holding their breaths. Father did not always give a talk during the week, saving his best stuff for Sunday. But sometimes he did, and it meant a longer mass. On this morning, they bowed their heads in sorrow as they saw Father headed toward the pulpit, grinning, thinking of what he would say. The Blessed Sisters of St. Francis, he began, as the children wiggled their butts like hens to get comfortable in the hard wood, while the old people in the back grinned at the chance to listen to Father's story once again. They don't like me saying this, but they're truth seekers. Pioneers coming from far away to come here to this distant planet to be with us. At communion time, Johnny stood with his row, his 15 cents still clenched in one hand. The rest of the children bowed their heads and just touched their foreheads to the tips of their first fingers with their palms pressed together. Johnny held one hand up, the one on the side of Sister Mark, seated behind her fourth graders, and Sister Mary Michael seated just behind Johnny and Jimmy's last row of third graders. He pressed his left fist against his open palm, touched his sweaty forehead to the fingertips of his one hand, his eyes half closed in adoration, and scouting the skies for any admonishment warheads headed his way. The two lines in the middle aisle inched down the incline toward the altar, toward Father, handing out the host with the two fourth graders on the side, one hand over their heart, the other holding a golden plate on a handle under the chin of each supplicant to keep Jesus from falling onto the wet, grimy blue carpet. The servers are like soldiers, protecting you from the Russians, trying to save you from a mortal sin and the eternal burning fires of hell licking at your feet and your head forever and ever, time without end, like hot scorching tongues, like your guardian angels. He too could become a guardian angel if he made it through server training boot camp in the fourth grade. Johnny inched closer, closer, his fist against his palm, not able to keep his eyes from any other eyes that might possibly be seeing that his hands were not properly folded. He exchanged awareness with the fourth grade server on his side, the one who'd handed him the money. Johnny looked away, then back, then way back. The body of Christ, Father said. Amen. Johnny tilted his head back. Not way back. He was not a bird in a nest. He stuck out his tongue. Not way out like the most hungry little starling. Like a skilled surgeon, Father placed the host on Johnny's tongue. Johnny pulled his tongue in, not like a lizard, but like a human being. He crossed himself with his right hand, not the left fist of the devil. He sucked lightly on the host, letting it dissolve subtly. The host is not a sucker. It's the body of Christ. Would you like to be chewed? Your arms, your head, your legs? Would you? Wouldn't you rather be sucked and then dissolve? He did not chew like a cow with its cud, and rounded the corner and leaned into the incline up the side aisle, keeping his eyes down in holy adoration, searching subtly, frantically for his home pew, not wanting to go way past and almost being lost, having to go home with the old people or living in the locker room with the Negroes. His heart leaped when he saw his familiar spot with his crushed hat. He dived in, went to his knees, crossed himself with eyes closed, felt Jimmy plop down and begin to whisper. They stood to receive Father's final blessing. You've got to go to Mark's room, Jimmy said too loud, as if Johnny could not remember. The children began to gather their things for the walk over to school. Johnny sat to rebuckle his boots and cast a glance down the road toward the middle aisle. Sister Mary Michael, M&M's, pursed her lips sympathetically and nodded gently to indicate that he may go, that she knew what was happening. And that is pretty much the end. That's the news from Moonrock Lake, Ohio, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We had a lot of technical issues tonight, and we really apologize for that. We will try to do better next time. And once again, we thank you for joining us right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And it is listener-supported radio, so remember to make generous donations. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mike Palachek, all of our great guests, Phil Ferrugio, Richard Flamer, Thomas Wertman, Frank Cordero, Rachel Finley. And most of all, I thank all of you. Thank you.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Most guys freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The blood is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. Your neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. And do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? In survival, in gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records?